The Son has set free is free indeed. I don't know who needs that song more than me, but I appreciate those words. Who the Son has set free is free indeed. I want to tell you a story about a lady, South Africa. They were going through a trial. And this was the South African's Truth and Reconciliation Committee. They were working out of the apartheid, and this case had come before this tribunal. She was now listening to the white officers and other people testify about the atrocities that her family had experienced. Her 18-year-old son had been dragged from their home, beaten, attacked by these police officers. When he offered no real information, they put a gun to his head and a point blank killed him. Testimony continued on that these officers put his dead body into the fire, and they then celebrated for the rest of the evening as his body was cooked there. Trial continues on, and it's told about 8 years later, these same police officers come to this house again, and they remove this woman's husband now. They take him outside the city, where he is bound and beaten for quite some time. A few hours later, they come back to the home, and they gather this wife as well, and take her in custody and out to this place that they go to see where her husband has been mistreated. There in front of her, these officers mock and ridicule both the husband and wife. Finally, they tie this man to a post above the wood pile and they set it ablaze. And she listens to this testimony over and over again. And as she gets a chance to talk, she shares the last thing that her husband said. He mouths to her, "Forgive them." In just a moment, we're going to be looking at Galatians chapter 4. And there is a passage in here that puts the grace of God in such a perspective that it is difficult for us to understand. Sometimes in our life, this grace is so beyond what we feel worthy. It is these moments in which we see grace. So the story continues on of this lady in this courtroom as she's hearing this horrific nature, as she's sharing about her husband, and this, the tribunal leader asks, "What would you like in this situation?" She stands before the court and she says, "There's three things that I wish for. Number one, I want Officer Vanderkirk to go with me to the place where my husband was burned. I want to gather those ashes and give him a proper burial. Number two, Officer Vanderkirk and these others have taken my family, and I want him to come to my house here in this ghetto twice a month so that I can show him what it is to be a part of a family and what it is like here in my community. And number three, I want someone to point out who this officer is so that I can go to him and give him a hug and let him know that he is still a child of God and that my forgiveness is real." At which point, Officer Vanderkirk passes out. As he comes to, someone in the back of the courtroom begins singing that familiar song, "Amazing Grace," and the whole courtroom gathers in this moment of great grace in the midst of great tragedy and injustice. Galatians chapter 4, starting in verse 6 through 9, tells us something significant about the grace of God. Listen to what Paul writes to this church who has known what it is to be with Christ and has left that. And Paul says, so quickly has left that. Paul says, because you are his sons, you are his daughters, you are. God sent his spirit of his son into our hearts. The spirit who calls out, Abba, Father. And that word Abba is such a colloquial, common name. That's the phrase that we cry out when we're riding our bike and we fall off and we skin our knee. We shout out, Daddy, help! When we're not feeling well, when we're sick in the middle of the night, when we come into our parents' room, that's the one name that brings some sort of calm and peace to the interruption of sleep of the parents. When the child says, Mom or Dad, I'm feeling good. Instead of seeing that as an interruption, instead of seeing that as an intrusion, and instead of seeing that as an alert, the parents rise up and offer grace and protection to the child. That's the word that's being used here. The spirit who calls out, Abba, Father. So you are no longer slaves, he says, but child of God. And since you are his child, God has made you also an heir. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were slaves to those who, by nature, were not gods. But now that you know God, or rather are known by God, how is it that you are turning back to these weak and miserable forces? Do you wish to be enslaved by them all over again? Paul gives to these Galatian believers a reminder of the great value that God has bestowed on each and every one of them. I want us to understand what it means when he allows us this intimate relationship of using this phrase. His spirit cries out, this Abba Father, such a personal relationship. I want to share with you three things that will help us to understand what this really looks like in our lives, what the value is, and hopefully as you dive into this lesson this week, you will see the importance of what God really means in our lives. In your bulletins on the center page, there's an opportunity for you to write down some notes. I want you to write these down as we go through. Right behind that on the following pages, there's an opportunity for a daily Bible study, some family questions, an opportunity for you to continue to study into Galatians. If you're following online, you can go to our website and on our sermon page. There you'll find a link for these pages as well. And you can follow along and dig deep into this study and go through Galatians a little bit more this week. Number one, it is an invitation for a personal and connected relationship. In Galatians chapter 4, verse 9, Paul says that you are known by God. You know God and you are known by God. In Hebrews chapter 10, verses 16 and 18, it refers back to this passage in Jeremiah 31, in which God is dealing with people who have forgotten his ways, forgotten him, and he says this, "This is the covenant that I will make with them after that time, says the Lord. And I will put my law in their hearts, and I will write them into their minds." They are knowing God, and God knows them. And it's significant. It is a relationship that has value. It is connected to the Almighty, the Creator of heaven and earth. And so the Hebrew writer continues on in verse 17. He adds, "In their sins and their lawless acts, I, God, will remember no more. And where there have been forgiveness, sacrifice of sin is no longer necessary." Where there has been forgiveness, sacrifice, sin is no longer necessary. This intimate relationship of being known and personally knowing God is something unique and special. I can't come to your house and use those familiar family words. Only your family. And that's what God is saying we are to him. And how he sees us in light of Christ. Number two, it is relational and directional. It involves us at being a committed, connected moment of a relationship in which we are being led and guided by God and God's Spirit. Jesus, in this most intimate relationship, as he is a part of this Godhead, comes to earth and lives among men, he says in John chapter 5, verse 19, "I can do nothing without the Father. I wish we, as Christ followers, would adopt that behavior and understanding of our relationship, because sometimes we want to live so much on our own strength, our own mind, our own ability, that we forget or that we discount God and God's Spirit. We forget and discount God's Word. We forget and discount God's people in our lives. And we want to live as I want to live. But Jesus says, I can do nothing apart from the Father. African proverb says that if you walk in the footsteps of your father, you will learn to walk like him. May that be as we are in a relationship directed by God. The last point that I want you to see in this relationship is that it's emotional. It is involving our heart. It pulls on our strings. It connects to who we really are as we have joy and sorrow in life. And it affects us. It influences us. It involves us into the life and the mix. We are not just robots. We are not just watchers or viewers of this whole scene. We are participants in the story that God is unfolding. And in Galatians chapter 4, verse 19 and 20, Paul tells this church that he has great pain for the choices that they make. He feels great sorrow for the decisions that they've made, for the value that they placed on God at once, now have traded for something that is law-abiding or binding. It is enslaving. It is entrapping in them. And he feels great sorrow for them. You can see Jesus in this intimate relationship there in the garden. As he's about to be put on the cross, he cries out to his Father, take this cup from me. And then in great humility and strength, he also says, but it's not my will, but your will be done, Father. And in Luke chapter 15, Jesus reminds us of a story of a father who had two sons. One son comes and he asks for the inheritance, and he goes off and in ungodly, unwise ways of life, he destroys that full inheritance. He destroys his life. And we see this emotion as this son finally comes to his senses, as he realizes where he's at, and he says, I'm going to come back to my father. And as he does, this older man, this father who's been in anguish about the loss of his son, now sees him coming down the path, and he hikes up his robe, he hikes it all up, and he runs like he's never run before as he goes and he grabs that son. This is what it means to cry out, Abba, Father. It is personal. It's relational. It's emotional. It means that we're connected, that we are directed, we are led, and that we are influenced, we are affected by God's Spirit. It brings us into such an intimate and loving, caring relationship that nothing else will ever come close to that. And Paul is saying, I don't understand why you're trading that for this garbage of being a slave to all these things. But the reality is, when we see the Father and his fatherly love demonstrated to us, we probably will adopt one of two personas. We will gravitate to one of two identities. And those are portrayed in the story of the prodigal son as we see this older brother coming before the Father. He hears about the son who has been brought back, who's been redeemed. He hears about this party that's happening, and he can't believe what's going on. And he's frustrated, and he's angry, and he wants to know, where is my celebration? Someone once said, you can't shake hands with a clenched fist. And he wants to know about his place that he has earned, that he deserves, that is rightfully his, and why anybody else should get anything above him. He's unable to forgive. Story is told of John Wesley as we go back to our colonial history. John Wesley came to the States to serve as a missionary in the colony of Georgia. And one day he was talking to General Oglethorpe about some events that had really negatively affected him and his work and reputation. And the general concludes by retelling this entire story. by saying this, "I will never forgive." To which John Wesley quickly responds, "Then, sir, I hope you never sin." This older brother demonstrates often how some of us live our lives in understanding God's great grace. But then there's this prodigal son, this individual, and there's two scenes in his life. There's the first scene in which he comes to the father. He's demanding, he's arrogant, he's prideful, he is self-consumed and self-focused, and he takes the money and he goes and he does his own thing. And probably if we had time, if we had enough faith in one another, we could share enough stories that we too would look like the prodigal son in these beginning moments as he cries out, "Give me, give me, give me," as he demands from the father, as we have lived in rebellion to our Father as well. Proverbs would describe this prodigal son in this stage of his life as foolish, and it would use the full strength of that word to describe his choices and the destruction that he is making. He lives in this moment of self-destruction and self-pity. He understands where he is going, and it's not successful in his life, but yet he remains hidden. He hides back because there is no fear like the fear of being found out. But as he comes to the rock bottom of his life, he has this moment in his life in which he reflects about the greatness or the goodness, the opportunities that are at his father's home. And so he goes and he says, "Can I be treated like one of your workers? Can I be a slave in your house?" And I didn't know exactly how to describe this, and so I say it this way. To be is the place to be. This idea of the prodigal son who comes back to the father is really where our hearts need to be. Because when we are here, when we are coming back to the father and saying, "Can I be in your presence? Will you accept me? Will you wash me clean?" When we come back and we recognize all these things have been a waste, this is what happens. The father runs to us. The father gets up and moves closer to us. With great emotion, with great joy, the Father comes towards us. And in verse 7 of Galatians chapter 4, Paul reminds us, we are no longer slaves. Those things that entrapped us and held us, the things that seemed to be so valuable, which were destruction and terrible for us, we are no longer slaves. And I wonder in our lives, are we to that place where really to be is the best place to be in our relationship with God? I read recently about a young man who was going off to college. And his mother gave him a duffel bag for laundry. She said, "Every night when you are heading to bed, put your dirty clothes in here. At the end of the week, take it to the laundromat." And so he goes off to school. He goes through that first week. And sure enough, at the end of the week, his duffel bag is full. And so he goes off to the laundromat. Thinks, it sure would be a lot easier if I just put the whole duffel bag in. And so he puts all of that into the washing machine. There's a young lady watching this whole scene, kind of smiling and laughing to herself. And just a few moments later, you hear that washing machine going thump, 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 as that duffel bag goes around and around in the washing machine. She comes over and helps him, and life is good. But he comes back to this point in his life, and he says, "As I reflected on that, I often think about my relationship with God. Of all the gifts and the things that God has given, sometimes my sins are getting lumped together. I just throw them before God. I don't really process through them. I don't think about all that He's given me. And it would be so much more of a value if I would think about that individually and give it more attention." Galatians chapter 4, verse 6 and 7 says, "Because you are His sons, God sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, the Spirit who calls out, 'Abba, Father,' so that you are no longer slaves, but God's child. Since you are His child, God has made you also an heir." In just a moment, we're going to sing this song about the cornerstone. When darkness seems to hide His face, I rest on His unchanging grace. In every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds within the veil. There's great value in recognizing God is God. Jesus is Lord. And if you need help in that way in your life, our shepherds are standing by. Our office is open throughout the week. Come and make yourself availed of those opportunities so that we can find encouragement and help, prayer and study as we try to live a life worthy of the great gift of grace that God has given to us. Let's stand together and sing this song as a word of encouragement to one another.
Lord, take my